The ability to maneuver a bicycle for pleasure and for transportation to work is becoming safer and easier in several area cities. A new swath of the Frisco Trail is connecting the path across Dixon and Maple Streets in Fayetteville, connecting Martin Luther King Boulevard all the way to the Botanical Gardens and beyond in Springdale. Likewise, Rogers and Bentonville are planning and creating new stretches to take cyclists along major corridors. If you get on a bicycle for fun, for business, or for something else, you should consider the new book, Bike Snob, systematically and mercilessly realigning the world of cycling by the blogger, cyclist, and now author Bike Snob NYC, also known as Eben Weiss. The book offers a thorough and often hilarious guide to bicycles and bicycling. Eben, welcome to Ozarks at Large.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
You write under the pseudonym that includes snob in the title, but your book seems to be more anti-snobbery than anything else. Certainly, there seems to be a big umbrella for all kinds of cyclists.
Yeah, absolutely. I did not want to be snobby in the book in the literal sense. I kind of try to, in the blog and in the book, I kind of try to turn the snob thing on its ear a little bit. I am snobby when it comes to being a little judgmental when people do silly stuff, but in terms of something being rarefied or inaccessible, I don't like that. I'm not a fan of that. I like stuff to be accessible.
Well, you start at the beginning from the penny farthing, the classic old bicycle with the unbelievably large front wheel, to really what was the first national fascination with bicycles. There was even a regular New York Times feature, Gossip of the Cyclers.
Yeah, that's right. It was the penny farthing. I mean, even before they figured out how to get the wheels of the bike the same size and not have you sitting way up in the air like that, I mean, even the penny farthing was hugely popular. That's what got people hooked on cycling. And it's just something we seem naturally to enjoy doing. It's been hugely popular since the beginning.
Most of the book does pay attention to contemporary cycling, and you address rules of the road, the ones that should be followed, and you think there are some that can be altered or adapted, don't you?
I do. First of all, I should say that I am an advocate of safe cycling and all of that stuff, and I know there's a lot of conflicts on the roads among different road users, whether they're drivers and cyclists, and some people tend to think cyclists don't follow the rules of the road. I believe in following the rules of the road. However, I do think just because of the way most of our cities and towns are designed, they're not really designed with cyclists in mind. So I think with experience, until the infrastructure kind of catches up with the way modern people are using and sharing the roads, I do think with experience and wisdom, you can here and there when there's a traffic rule or law or signal that really doesn't work for you as a cyclist, you can kind of circumvent it.
If you're at the four-way stop and it's apparently, or a red light and it's apparent there's no traffic coming, rolling on is all right.
I think it is uncertain. If it's totally safe and if you're not cutting anybody off or bothering a pedestrian or anything, and a lot of that depends on where you are, though. I mean, for example, where I live, where there's a lot of car traffic, there are times when stopping at an intersection along with cars, and if you wait for the light to change, I mean, sometimes the cars behind you will be bearing down on you, and sometimes you kind of need that head start at the red light. I think the answer down the line is you have signals that are timed differently for different users.
You write that you are not bothered by the honking or sometimes blaring horn of a car when you're on a road.
That's right. Well, I am bothered in the sense that anybody kind of beeping at you can be irritating, but I'm not bothered in the way that I'm going to rush to get out of their way.
Right.
Because really the only person who has a right to make a sound and expect me to jump out of their way if I'm doing everything I should be is an ambulance or a fire. Otherwise, if I'm moving too slow for you, you can go around me. It's not really going to take any time out of your day.
You have this great exchange that might be somewhat created, but this perhaps somewhat imaginary exchange or compiled exchange you've had with people who drive cars and expect that you should get over for them.
Yeah, there is a certain mentality some people have, And I should say that most, not all cyclists, but many cyclists drive cars too. But I think what happens when you have some people who drive cars and don't ever use any other form of transportation seem to think that anything on the road that's not a car is an imposition. And it's just such a infuriating thing to hear if somebody's beeping at you to get out of your way and you say, what's your problem? What's going on? They say, well, you're on a bike. You should get out of my way, which is just not the case.
My favorite section is sort of a field guide to cyclists and all the different types there are and who gets along with whom. And there's a lot of tongue-in-cheek here, but it does show that not everyone who gets on a bicycle does it for the same reason, but everyone who does get on a bicycle, more or less, is a cyclist.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that's the number one thing to remember is that there are so many different ways to enjoy riding your bike, and you can do it in a totally utilitarian and practical way. You can do it purely for recreation. You can be a serious racer. You can just get out and have fun. It really doesn't matter. I do think the different types of cyclists and the way they get into it, though, are kind of fascinating and funny. Part of the reason I did that in the book was kind of to kind of pigeonhole and make fun of all the different types of cyclists. I think it's important to do that because it makes the whole thing seem less intimidating. I think it's important to remember as cyclists, we're all pretty funny. Anybody who gets way into something, can be funny. So, and I don't think there's anything wrong with laughing at that. And I certainly recognize myself in a lot of those types.
You certainly don't over-romanticize. One thing you write is bicycles do not have a soul.
Yeah, I think it's important to remember that. I think a lot of people, it's like anything. You can get into cycling just like you can get into all kinds of things, whether it's cars, food, boats,
guitars,
whatever. Yeah, guitars, any kind of thing. You can get way, way, way into the bicycle itself. And, I mean, a bicycle's a really cool machine, but you reach a point where you become obsessed with it, and it only ends in tears, especially because a bicycle can get damaged or stolen. And then where are you? You know, you should be enjoying riding the thing. You should keep a little perspective, I think. So I warn about that in a humorous way in the book. I think anyone who rides a bike has broken one or stolen one, or rather had one stolen.
Had one stolen, right.
Yeah, yeah. Hopefully not stolen one.
You address a hurdle that many people, myself included, use for saying why we don't ride our bikes more often to work or around a town, and that's because we don't feel safe.
Yeah, I hear that from a lot of people, and there are reasons, certainly valid reasons, to be wary out on the road. There's dangers and all of that stuff. I'm certainly not saying it's a risk-free endeavor, but at the same time, driving your car isn't risk-free at all. And in fact, you're probably more likely to get injured or killed in your car than on your bike. A lot of this stuff, I think, is perception, the idea that cycling is hugely dangerous. And it's reinforced by people. People who don't ride bikes see people on bikes, and they think, wow, they're crazy. They're out there with the cars, you know. And so it's this, it becomes an implicit thing in our culture, for lack of a better word, that riding a bike is something crazy people do. And it's just not true. If you ride your bike smart and get a little experience under your belt, there's no reason not to do it. And it gets safer all the time because more people are doing it and more cities are improving things and everybody's learning. So,
and there is a section in this book that is very basic, down to earth, how to fix a flat, how to keep care of your saddle and your chain, things that the first time cyclist or someone who's more experienced needs to know.
Yeah. I mean, my purpose in putting that stuff in there was less as a manual and more just to remind people, or if you didn't know in the first place, tell people that the bicycle is just a really simple machine. Pretty much anybody can do the basic maintenance they need to do. And just like making fun of the different types of cyclists is a way to say to people, don't get hung up on worrying how you look. Don't get hung up on thinking you need this this or that to ride a bike. Just ride it. It's the same thing with that mechanical section you're talking about. I think I basically say, like, oh, you have to keep the chain lubed. You know, you should know how to fix a flat tire, just like you should know how to change a tire on your car. Here's a couple of tips for getting yourself comfortable on the bike, and that's it. You know, it's really a simple thing, and cycling is one of those things where just by riding every day, you just learn. It teaches, the bike will teach you pretty much everything you need to know.
Now, when you're deciding whether or not to ride, you look to Hollywood as your guide. And people, when they pick up this book, might not know that D.W. Griffith, Al Jolson, and Alfred Hitchcock will be mentioned. Explain the movie system.
Yeah, I kind of calibrated the temperatures, the ambient temperatures with a timeline of Hollywood films, which is kind of hard to explain, I guess, in words, but it's pretty obvious if you look in the book. Basically, the more recent the movie, the hotter it gets is how it works.
when did you decide that after being with the blog that this could be a book that could go on a shelf?
It was something, you know, as a writer, you always have a book. You always have books in mind, and that you'd always like to write a book. But even when the blog started getting popular, I didn't necessarily think of a book, because I didn't want the book just to be what the blog was. And I don't think the blog works as a book in that, you know, you can't be super topical. And my blog is very self-referential and all of that stuff. And I didn't want to do just kind of like a book of pictures of silly bikes. And then maybe I had been doing it a year or something like that. It's hard to remember, but I was actually riding home from work one evening, and I was just thinking about why I write my blog and why I ride my bike, and the reason just being that that underneath it all, cycling is something that's made me very happy and has taught me a lot of things. It's taught me about myself, and it's taught me about the world, and I wanted to write a book that, in a funny way, expressed that and made the people who experience it the same way I do kind of reaffirm that for them, and also something that somebody who is kind of interested in the world of cycling from outside could read and enjoy and be encouraged by. So that was it. It kind of hit me on the way home from work that's what I needed to do. It needed to be more than just silly, but the book is silly. Don't get me wrong. It's important to be silly.
It is silly, but it is, I think, especially for people who might fall into my category as people who might be on a bicycle more than once a week, but not every day, and certainly can have a few weeks pass by where it doesn't come out of the garage.
Mm-hmm.
I think it fits nicely for us.
Oh, well, thank you. Yeah, I mean, I wanted it to really cover all of that. I mean, the there's people who feel like they're going through withdrawal if they don't ride their bike every day, and there's people who train for races every day, and they, you know, even though they don't get paid to do it and have jobs, and then there's people who just want to ride a bike when they feel like it, or they just want to ride to the store. You know, they don't want to put on special clothes. They don't want special anything, and I'm speaking to all those people because we still all share that in common, that we enjoy to ride.
And learn how to lock up your bike.
Yeah, definitely, definitely. That's a common sense thing that not a lot of people are aware of, especially new riders. I mean, you hear the laments all the time, especially in a big city where I live, just the thefts. And going back to what you said about not getting too wrapped up in the bike itself, you just hear over and over people getting into riding, and they get this expensive bike and source all these fancy parts and spend a bunch of money, and then you go lock it up with a flimsy lock, or you don't pass the chain through the frame properly, and it's gone. That's it. Thousands of dollars down the drain. So, locking your bike is one of the most important things to know how to do unless you're never going to let the bike out of your sight.
The name of the book is Bike Snob: Systematically and Mercilessly Realigning the World of Cycling by Bike Snob NYC, also known as Evan Weiss. Evan, thank you so much for your time.
Oh, thank you very much. My pleasure.